necessarily those of WWPR Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
About a response, it's appropriate that we allow the investigation to move forward. I do understand that the investigation is progressing, and that as the members of the national security team meet to discuss this matter, they are considering a range of options. As they do so, though, they're mindful of the need for a couple of things. They're, first of all, as we would be in any scenario, sort of strategic scenario like this, they would be mindful of the fact that we need a proportional response.
And for us to basically, for this government under Barack Obama, to unilaterally give up all the things they gave up in exchange for nothing on the side of democracy, is unacceptable in my mind.
You know, the 50-year embargo with Cuba just hadn't worked. I mean, if the goal was regime change, it sure doesn't seem to be working. And probably it punishes the people more than the regime, because the regime can blame the embargo for hardship. And if there's open trade, I think the people will see what it's like to all the things that we produce under capitalism. So in the end, I think probably opening up Cuba is a good idea.
So
good morning. It's time for the Morning Edge here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm Henry Raines. Here's Augie.
Good morning, ho, 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 Tampa Bay. We're coming into that time of the year, and it's getting to be a joke. It's all in the ether, don't you know? Who did in Sony, or did Sony do themselves? Well, what we're going to find out, I mean, you know, this is North Korea with China, and equals Iran and Venezuela, and all these interests are involved in this. And who is in the middle of all that? Cuba. And above all, Pope Francis. Where does this all come together? And who and what is China most afraid of but a flood of North Koreans going into China? Well, anyway, we've got some guests in the studio, and we're going to talk about some of these connections that people might want to think about. You want to introduce the guests, Henry?
Well, it's that time of the year, Augie.
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, it's that time of the year, but it's the other time of the year, which is more or less the semi-annual Sullivan Mailey Report.
Oh.
And
okay.
The winter edition, the Christmas edition.
They're dressed like Santa Claus.
Yeah, Sullivan even brought his dad along to keep him busy today.
Yeah, and they're not, but they're not dressed like, they don't have the green on like the elves. I saw that movie. It was a terrible movie.
They're here in the studio. Good morning, guys. Merry Christmas.
Good morning, guys.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Thanks for having us, guys.
No, no, thanks for having you. It's a great time of the year to have a father and a son and tell us all about what's going on. And what is the story you have to tell about Cuba?
Well, it appears that I think the most impressive part about it is that something so big was kept secret in Washington for so long. So I have to say that I was utterly shocked that a deal of this magnitude was brokered. And I don't know if people are really realizing yet how historic this is going to be. I mean, there are profound consequences locally for the Florida economy. This opens up an enormous opportunity for trade, for Port Manatee. It also...
What's so important about Port Manatee?
Well, Port Manatee... Any time we can have trade port that is very viable and very close.
How close?
To Cuba, you're what, about 3 hours on a boat, I would imagine?
Really? At 30 miles an hour?
I don't think you're going that slow, but you have a tremendous amount of opportunity, Augie, at Port Manatee to open up relations. I mean, when we're going down and trying to work things out in Latin America, when we have a country that's that much closer, there's obviously opportunities for us to do business there. So that's just on a micro, minimal, local scale.
I think what people misconceive is when they think about like the Mariolistas and the people that come over on the rafts and things like that, the shortest distance is to the Keys or to Miami.
Right.
But port to port, Port Manatee is the closest to the major port in Cuba. But before we get too deep in the heavy stuff, I've been watching Sullivan Mail. And Sullivan, you carry your dad's timeline. You must have some broad shoulders there, because I'm always seeing things, and all the people are commenting on you and all the accomplishments you've been doing since 6 months ago when you were here. Tell the audience, and I know your grandmother's listening because she friended me on Facebook, so you're carrying me, too.
Oh, that's a load. be careful what you put on your shoulders.
What do you think is the best thing you've done since the last time you were here?
What is the best thing?
That's a hard decision to make.
Well, make a decision. Three things.
I got my first gold medal at wrestling 2 weeks ago.
All right.
Oh, you're the wrestler, aren't you?
Second one a week later.
I won the science fair in my school.
Oh, I think that's
a week or two
ago. Maybe the more important.
Mind and body.
And then the day after science fair, I found out that in one of my periods, we enter these contests where we have to write an essay for them usually.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that we did was you had to write an essay about why you appreciate veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a national competition, but first they judged it school-wide, and I won for my school.
Oh.
And my school sent in 18 essays, including mine, but the judge said to my teacher that the judge wanted my teacher to tell me that he said another middle school, Hale Middle School, sent in like 70 essays, I think, and I outscored all of them.
Wow.
So you went for the middle schools nationwide?
Not nationwide yet. I won for my school.
Did you hear the yet in there?
I won for my school. There was first, second, and third for my school. And he wanted me to know that I beat all the Hale ones, too.
Ooh.
All the ones from Hale Middle School. But he doesn't know about how the second and third place winners fell among Hale. $100.
You got $100.
So
let me ask one little question here. What year are you in middle school?
Sixth grade.
You're in sixth. So you're sixth, seventh, and eighth? Or does it go...
Yeah,
sixth,
seventh,
and then you
eighth.
Go, and then there's 4 years of high school, or do you stay in middle school for one more year?
4 years of high school.
So, Augie, writing is hereditary. Dennis, the editor of the Brain and Times, inherited it from Sullivan. When does this column appear in the Brain and Times?
I don't know. There might be some copyright issues at this point.
When's his first guest column? I mean, you've been carrying him on Facebook. Carrying him there,
he
too.
He had a couple of guest columns already.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, he's way ahead of you.
To do a child's review of one of the plays a couple of years ago. So he's done that. So he's got some bylines already, too. And he's got some photo credits, believe it or not.
We're considering even starting me to do a column
Did you hear that? We are considering.
starting. That I might do a weekly column about, like, problems in a school from a student's perspective.
You need a title, too, but not just a title of a column. You need a title. So for your resume, you got all these other achievements, but you need a title now to go on the resume.
I would say Sullivan's Blow. That would be because, when you're going to give it out there, you're going to give it out there. I was listening to an interview with Fresh Air and with Mr. Colbert. And he says, you always do with the gloves on. You still punch them. And when he did the press thing, he said that, you're the decider, aren't you? You always have been, and you always will be. He was referring to George Bush, who was sitting in the audience right there. He didn't hold back one little bit. Now, you might want to think about that courage. What would you most want to say if you do have your own byline? What would be the first thing on your agenda, Sullivan?
You had a 20-minute rant this morning at breakfast on something you were upset about at school.
What was that?
We were talking about this morning about how there's so many things that the school spends their money on.
Well, what was the one thing in particular that wasn't happening at your school that you didn't think made sense?
Health.
But what was in particular? The milk?
Yes.
It was a milk sour.
What's the milk problem?
We should be buying it from Dakin Dairy, a small farm right near our school.
Instead of
Borden, which is a nationwide brand.
Oh, so you're getting down to the nitty gritty of business.
And they say they don't have the money for that, although they have enough money to give every kid free ice cream in the three last days before Christmas break.
Well, then you know what's up and what's down, don't you? If there's something you would do about education itself, what would it be? For everybody, not just for Sullivan.
I would make the lunches better.
The munchies. So what you eat or what you think?
Yeah.
What about what you think?
What are you? Connected, aren't they?
Yeah.
I know you want to get into your topic, so let me ask one more thing, because one of the first things I ever learned about Sullivan Maley and his dad is I think they have a Christmas tradition. At least the year that I first had them here, they were helping out feeding empty little tummies. Felt you do something for the community on Christmas.
We do something either Christmas Eve or the day before every year in order to kind of give back and prep for it. So tell them what we've been doing the last couple of years and what's coming up next week.
We go to McDonald's and buy about 30 hamburgers and hand them out to homeless people.
Where do you find homeless people?
When we're here, sometimes we've been on the road, and we've done it in Savannah, Georgia once when we were visiting for Christmas. Where we typically do it here, you can easily find a few dozen in Bradenton. Sarasota has also been a place that we've done, and we've also done the 4th Street Park in St. Petersburg, which is a large place for them to congregate. And, we'll take a few dozen hamburgers. We'll take some sweatshirts, some socks, some different things, because a lot of times you're getting that cold time of year and people are missing some necessities. And, we try to just, do that right before the holidays.
And this year we did a part of our garage sale because we moved into a new house and we had a bunch of junk sitting in the garage that we needed to sell. And my dad said that for all your help on the house, you can have all the money from the garage sale. So I got $50 so far, and I chose to spend half of it for charity. I'm spending $15 to pay half the price for the hamburgers for the homeless with him.
Wow.
And I'm spending $9 to buy a toy for Toys for Tots.
Well, that's a generous thing to do. I used to work in the ghetto, so to speak, in Illinois, in a city up there. And I, at this time of the year, I would pick families, and I would give them a small turkey, even at Thanksgiving. And I would leave it on their porch. I didn't knock on the door. I just left it on the porch, frozen.
But we're already getting feedback on Sullivan.
Oh, are we? Oh, okay. Cheers. Oh, there you go.
The other place locally, if people want to help and find families that are in need around the holidays, is if you go over to the Salvation Army Center downtown, where they have the shelter. They're not allowed to go until about 4 o'clock, so you'll start to see people congregating there in the afternoon and hoping they'll get a bed a few hours before. And it's a good spot to, if you've got blankets, if you've got some extra sweatshirts, if you've got, just some things that, you can take them to Goodwill, you can take them different places, but sometimes, you could be a little bit more direct and find a family that really needs something, at a tough time of the year.
You're making me think. I know in my backyard, and it must be in a lot of other backyards around town, the citrus trees are giving their fruit now.
Loaded
and I loaded up some bags and took it down to our Daily Bread and Salvation Army so that, rather than just let them fall to the ground and...
Well, this is a time when people tend to want to do that, and this is a time when we have more homeless than ever in Manatee and Sarasota area. But the Sunrise Service every year in Sarasota on the beach down there, they give monies at that, and all those monies are given to the local school in that Gulf Gate area. I can't think of the name of the school. Through the summertime, because the kids don't get lunch summer long that they get in the schools, and so that they're still, and the numbers have gone triple from what they were a year or so ago.
Well, and that brings us back to full circle to Feeding Empty Little Tummies. Do you have an update on that for us, Dennis?
Yeah, Feeding Empty Little Tummies is still doing very well.
Jane Evers' brainchild.
Yeah, we serve on the board of that organization. It's a wonderful group that fills backpacks for students that, you know, often the school lunch and breakfast is the only source of consistent sustenance they have. We've gone through, the unfortunate loss of Jane, who passed last year, and then Jane Evers, former First Lady of Bradenton for a long time, 20 years, Mayor Bill Evers' wife, and then Mr. Molter took it over and unfortunately passed of cancer just months after that. So, you know, the organization was rocked by the loss of two executive directors. But, we're back. We're here. We're still putting backpacks into schools and helping kids. And, you can go to feltinc.org and learn more about it and see how you can host either a fundraiser or a food drive to help that organization as well.
There is an institution in Sarasota, a Panera Bread. Do you have Panera Bread up here?
We do, yes.
A Day's Baking or something to that effect. And you might want to add to your list of donors in that way. You might contact
them. Sure.
So anyone having that concern, you might want to think about that. In any event, it's all in the ether. We don't know what Sony's doing. Why should they have done what they did? Should we back down from our First Amendment?
That's a tough question. That's not a First Amendment. I mean, you got to remember, Congress didn't make a law that prevented Sony from releasing that. That was judgment of a private corporation.
No, I'm not talking about Sony. I mean somebody coming in and hacking and shutting down their First Amendment right.
Oh, I'm sorry. When you look at it, I don't necessarily think it was the hacking so much as the idea that a lot of theaters pulled out under the very understandable fear that they didn't want to be the host to a tragedy on Christmas Day, no matter maybe how unlikely or how, you know, invalid the threats may have seemed to some people. If you own a theater or you own a theater chain and you think of the possibility of a Christmas Day tragedy, you know, happening there, bomb or, you know, God forbid, something horrible, I think that's going to give anybody pause. So I kind of understand the theater owners, position, and then at the same time, you know, Sony is a business, and if their distribution system isn't going to be, you know, set up to properly, you know, perform as an outlet for their product, then, you know, it might make sense to pull that, you know, as well, just from a business perspective, let alone from, you know, the PR perspective on their point. So, I don't know how we'd feel as Americans if another country, maybe that we had hostile relationships with, were filming a comedy in which President Obama was assassinated, and kind of offhandedly, I don't know that we would take that. I can kind of see us having a very vitriolic response to it. So, you know, these kind of things, I try not to get caught up right in the windstorm of it, and I try to get a little bit of distance and perspective, you know.
So you don't think in any way, I mean, several people, actors and so forth, and there was a director, I'm trying to think of what his name was, who was very concerned about producing films in the future if this intimidation
continues. Well, again, you have to look at it and say, it's very easy for any individual to question who's not responsible for the outcome to question the judgment and say, well, I don't think we should do this. Well, at the same time, they wouldn't be the host of that tragedy. So it's a little bit easier for them to have the artist's perspective. As, you know, an artist who is very protective of my ability to say what I want, say what I think, and not be censored, I'm certainly empathetic to that part of it. But at the same time, I understand the businesses involved and the decisions that they made. And again, I'd have to stress that I think the subject matter of this one particular film is pretty far above and beyond, you know, what's typical in terms of...
There were two other films that were being considered and been shelved. One more film about Korea. One about Russia, all in the same vein.
Well, I can't speak to any of those individually because I don't know the details of the films or anything about it. But when we're talking about a film that makes a comedic spoof of the murder of another country's leader, I think that's a kind of unique territory. That's not something we do every day in the arts. And like I said, I would only
so isn't controversy.
I would only ask that we all take a look at it and say, what would the American response likely be if this was a parody film in some other country like that made light of partially to that sort of thing. I think we would protest. That's kind of the first question I think we need to ask before we get our defenses up.
Okay. And perhaps, Augie, it might be an interesting point for the media to, in this all the Cuba news, I don't see too much talking about all of our assassination attempts on Fidel Castro.
Exactly.
His background.
We did that before. So suddenly we're in this fear mode, and Castro was always the target.
We can really try and kill him, but let's not kill him fictionally.
There's another idea, is that the spoof, if anything, is a kind of tongue-in-cheek look at the way we have behaved in our foreign policy. So we have done things just like that. And let's ask another question. Let's say there was a tragedy. Let's say there was, you know, a bombing at a theater or something like that. And let's say it sparked maybe, I don't want to say a war, but maybe some sort of
well, the
conflict.
They shot down an airplane with 100 people on it.
Let's look at this and say, let's say this touchstoned off and we said, we stood our ground and released this film. Again, we're not talking about a monument of theatrical, you know.
The quality of the film.
It's iconic of the American pop culture.
Will we say, this is the hill we should have died on? You know, it was worth it. We got that film out. We got that message across. We got that story told.
I think we're putting that in a vacuum that we couldn't create enough security to protect people in a movie theater.
Exactly.
Let's go to the phone lines. I believe we have Pat on the line.
Good morning, Pat.
Hi. I have two questions. Number one, what's the Sullivan to? Is it a charter or a public school?
It is a public school.
And how big?
How big is this school?
Yeah. What grade is he in?
He's in sixth grade. We accelerated him, so he's only 11, but he is in sixth.
Okay. All right. And then I wondered what you think about the fear factor in the United States overall. I mean, if we feel that our homeland security is secure, which they say it is, then why does it matter if someone from Korea or somewhere threatens to blow up our theaters? Do we not have real security? And would any of you, all three of you, go to the film if it were open? And would we, if another country did make a film about Obama being assassinated, would we threaten to blow up their theater, really? I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you.
Okay, I don't think we, and again, I think you have to take it everything in a relative perspective. I don't think we'd threaten them as a country. I don't know if it was an official state response that North Korea threatened to blow up theaters. So I'm not saying that. And again, you have to look at it in a vacuum. There's not, when you look at, I'm certainly not justifying it. We certainly would have a lot more options as the leading economic power in the world, as the leading military power in the world, as a leader of world influence. We can certainly flex our influence a lot more easily than most countries can. So, I mean, our responses to anything would never be kind of on a tit-for-tat basis. I think, to Henry's point, there's not enough security in the world. Listen, if I don't care, you know, how much security you have, this has been proven throughout history, if someone is willing to pay the consequence with their own life or imprisonment or whatever, an act of terrorism is always, I think,
but we have that
achievable.
We have that with the gun situation.
Sure. If somebody's going to do it, they're going to do it. Would I go to the theater? I wasn't that interested in seeing the film to start with.
What about the media? Has NBC in particular came out with a story, I believe it was yesterday, saying that the government knows that North Korea's government was behind this. And by the very nature of the act, how do they, in other media, have said, well, you know, that isn't quite it. We had Josh Earnest from the White House saying, well, we're investigating. So there's no official statement that this has happened, but a lot of the media just jumps on that one leak, and now it's a fact in the American people's mind.
And that's true. And again, like I said, there is no evidence this is an official state response, this is the country, that any of this is even legitimate yet. I think you have private businesses, theater chains, who looked at this and said, listen, even with the remotest possibility, a Christmas Day opening, I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole. I don't want it happening in my theater on Christmas Day.
What about New Year's Day, or is there any other day?
Well, again, Augie, I'm not, you know, splitting hairs with it. I'm just saying that to me, I'm not saying I'm justifying the response, but I certainly understand it. But what's important is that's what the response was. a private company who decided that they didn't want to engage in that business on that day. And enough of them did it that the studio then decided, you know what, it's probably not viable to have a Christmas Day release if we don't have the distribution networks. And then, if they're going to do that, then maybe from
another
a PR
thing
perspective,
to keep in mind is we're in the age of multiplex. So an attack on that movie is also going to take out the people that are watching Annie.
And even if somebody doesn't go to that movie because it's in the theater, they're not going to go and see Annie. So I think more than anything, this was a business decision. I don't think it was a First Amendment decision. I don't think it was a political decision. I think it was a business decision, and it's not one that I can find much fault in because, I mean, these companies invest their money. They're private businesses. They're not obligated to show anything or take any sort of risk whatsoever. And if people want to punish them, they could punish them at the box office by going to see nothing. I saw some people post that, well, I'm not going to see any movie for a month then. That is what actually your action of your option for attribution in this situation is that you can punish them with your business. But that's it. They're not.
Why would we punish Sony? Why wouldn't, Sony's and people affiliated with Sony have been complaining, what are we as a country going to do about Korea doing these things? They shot down a plane.
So then you get away from, a movie decision anymore. Because again, the U.S. government didn't say, don't show the movie. Private companies decided not to. So then you get it. What you're talking about now is
there's a call for the U.S. government as was mentioned by the caller. Where's the protection that we can go back at the source of the hacking?
Well, again, that's what we're talking about. When Henry said, when they said, listen, we're looking into all that now. We don't know exactly, the nature and the origin of this. And now it becomes a foreign policy question and a government policy question, which I think is a good one. Yes, they should. I'm confident that the NSA and a number of organizations are investigating this and trying to determine what the source of the threat was, whether it was a viable threat. With things of this magnitude, especially in the post 9/11 era, I think it's really obvious that you've got the ability to cause, and aided by a large and powerful media wind tunnel, you have the ability to cause a very significant panic with even a relatively minor incident. So whoever makes the threat may have, we may learn, has zero capability to follow through or carry it out. It may not be a viable threat in any serious nature, but who's going to respond on that until that can be determined in a very certain nature,
I'm having a problem with this because I'd say, in a way, our cowardice is getting in the way of our Constitution.
Well, cowardice. So I guess the question for me to understand this better, what do you think needs to be done that's not being done? What do you think is the appropriate response?
And it's, just let me quickly say, we're hearing the voice of Dennis Maley, editor of the Braden and Times.com. Sullivan Maley, his son, is in here with us. Phone lines are open at 941-745-1490 so we can hear your voice, too. 941-745-1490.
There's going to be more threats. Now that this has come to fruit like this, this tree of fear that's been shoved over.
I understand what you're saying. There's going to be more. So what do you think was mishandled? What do you think should have happened?
Well, I think Sony should have talked to the government and said to the State Department or someone, how are you going to help us out in this situation? We'll hold off on Christmas Day, but we want to do it the following day. Or is there any day when we can put this up? Or is there anything we can put up that can't be?
And they did have consultations with the State Department before the production of the movie.
Well, so
the completion of the production.
Exactly. So
which didn't, and I just read yesterday, it was interesting. It wasn't originally written to be about North Korea. It was going to be a fictitious country. And they said with the Borat movie, at the time it was in development, was already out. And the idea of a fictitious dictator in the Middle East origin, which was how the movie was written, didn't play as well. So they got some feedback that maybe they should just try to adapt it to this. It was actually written to be a fictitious country and then adapted to be North Korea.
Well, the reason I say cowardice is because if we're going to...
Cowardice on whose behalf, though?
A part of our representative government protecting our businesses, our people, and individuals are afraid who were part of the movie because the two actors are very concerned. They won't even come on Letterman and be interviewed. So the fear factor is spread all over this scary stuff. They're not going to put their foot in the water on this. What other things are going to make us the same way fearful? Anybody can play this game against the United States, and the big boogeyman is a paper tiger.
Okay, I'm still not quite understanding what the appropriate response would have been other than some sort of government intervention to take over the distribution of this movie.
Well, we're number one, aren't we? I mean, we're number one, we're number one, we're number one.
Number one of what?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, now.
We had an airlift and airdrop of DVDs to North Korea. We are at 9:41 on the schedule. I want to remind everybody that on Fridays we have to sign off early, so if we're going to get to any other topics here.
Let me just say one more thing on that. From what you just said with the actors and so forth, I think another thing that's just worth considering, again, from my journalistic perspective of looking at it from 30,000 feet, is that quite possibly everybody involved undertook a project that had, which really, I know hindsight's 20/20, but really seems to have some pretty obvious blowback, and there was no real consideration given for what are we going to do if this has a kind of predictable response of getting some other countries really upset. Are we going to, are the actors on board with saying, listen, your lives might be threatened. Are we still going to go out and do press? Are we really going to?
Well, that's exactly my point. The land of the free, the home of the brave.
So I think maybe that wasn't all considered beforehand because this was pretty predictable. And then,
but you're giving me, let's be cautious. Let's be cautious.
Hold on. I'm not giving you let's be cautious. I'm giving you that the people, what I'm saying is the people who are being cautious, I think it's well within their right to be cautious, and I don't think I'm in a position.
It's not about right to be cautious. It's that the attitude.
I don't think I'm in a position to tell them not to be. I mean, my
point is the attitude of be cautious first. Oh, sure. Well, they already talked.
But I'm not telling them to be cautious. What I'm saying is if you made a movie and you're scared of the consequence, you don't want to put it out, no problem.
Well, how do you know you are if you're going to go
ahead? They said they are.
After the fact of the movie being produced.
Uh-huh.
It's been produced.
Well,
now,
either put it out, right, and deal with the consequences, or don't. But I don't think that you owe me an explanation, the American people an explanation. You're a private business that invested money. You have a future writing on all these different things.
You're jumping over what I say. I think you're suggesting that we have to be ultra-cautious.
I'm not suggesting that. What I'm saying, Augie, is that you're wrong. I'm not suggesting we have to be cautious at all. So let me be clear. What I'm saying...
Well, I think you're wrong.
But it might be a good time to move on.
What I'm saying,
well, I'm not going to throw anything.
I don't pretend to know whether they should be cautious, audacious, or any of it. I think they're a private enterprise who've invested in something, and they're completely within their rights whether they want to show it or not show it. I don't think it's as large of an issue as anyone else is making it out to be.
Let's give Augie's rebuttal and move on.
All I'm saying is if you go into a creative project, and you've gone through the precautionary things that they went through before with the State Department, and then something like this comes forward, I think they feel there are some, and I heard some of the people say, we feel like our country is the one that should act in our stead to protect us from this hacking situation.
We could have soldiers at the theater.
Well, you can make the scenario anything you like. The point is, in Colorado, we had a shooting by a young man in the high school situation. You can't predict anything in these situations.
You surely can.
And the invaders with the guns go into the schools and kill the kids. Here we have something that is an excuse to go in and kill. Who are the Koreans going to assign to do that job? The NRA? I mean, this is a bit of a joke on the American people, I think. And I think we've got to show leadership in saying, are we going to give up our freedoms, our freedom of movement, association, and so forth, because of all these fears? And I think that's what I'm concerned
about.
Well,
unless there's an audience member that has something else to add on this at 941-745-1490, 941-745-1490. Let's see if we can put another stew together here of Dennis's columns. Oh, well, we have a caller. You're live on the air.
Good morning.
It's a great PR campaign. We're all being duped.
I think so, too.
You're right. It's a bad movie that I'll end up number one,
later,
right?
In the new year. And, it's going to have tremendous, tremendous interest and huge attendance because of the big brouhaha that's being made over this international affair.
This is Ken, right, Ken?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And Sony figures it's the only way to recoup the investment on their bad movie, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Or maybe, down the road we'll learn that there was a plot by the CIA to send two flunky Hollywood to North Korea to
maybe from
to
USA
bump the guy off, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
just backing up a little bit. We don't really we can't. They haven't substantiated the fact that North Korea is involved in this. So, what about the irresponsible reporting by the international media that that they are responsible? And I go back to the attack in Australia with the fellow that held those hostages, and immediately they blamed ISIS and a terrorist attack, and later it's substantiated that he was a local known criminal who had had a lengthy local criminal record and had nothing to do with ISIS. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Well, there you go. Ken, that's a heck of a point. I think your point about hype and so forth and promotion, this has been a success, hasn't it? Anyway, we got a new caller.
We do. We're going to change gears right here, and a blast for longtime listeners of 1490 in the morning show. We have Sayward, the radio princess, on the line, wanted to say hi and Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry Christmas, Sayward.
Sayward.
Merry Christmas, Henry.
Oh, there
that. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, Sayward.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I've never met Sayward. You might want to tell us a little about
Sayward, that. Yeah, Sayward co-hosted one of the incarnations of the radio show about 2 years ago, wasn't it, Sayward?
Yeah,
2012,
like that.
Something like that.
It's been a minute.
Yeah, and Dennis has met her when he came in studio before. I don't know if Sullivan's ever met her, but she's been working on a production of her own for the last couple of years. You want to tell everybody what's new with you?
Not a whole lot. I just had a baby about 8 months ago.
Oh, so. that's a production. There you go.
That's number two, right?
another little girl. Her name is Bryn.
So I don't think I've ever met you. I'm Augie, and so what are your thoughts about our conversation, or do you have any?
Do I what?
Well, the thing we've been talking about, or is there another subject you want to talk about, Sayward?
What do you have planned for your...
I just called to say Merry Christmas to everybody.
Oh, this is a good wish. Well, we've got...
Augie's trying to drag you right into the mud. trying to get you involved in this nasty fight.
Well, it's not a nasty fight. It's a fair fight, so it's not nasty. But the issues, we were just concerned about the Sony issue and the shutting down of the film and so forth.
So say just quickly, what are your plans for Bryn's first Christmas and for your older daughter Calista, and then we got to wrap up, I think.
Well, we're just spending time with family, and we're going over to one of our aunt's houses on Christmas Day and having a big family dinner.
Oh.
So that's going to be really fun. That's always exciting when everyone gets together.
All right. Well, I've seen Bryn's pictures on Facebook, and she's beautiful. She looks like her mother, and looks
wow.
like Calista. And
I think I've got to meet you, Sayward.
We can go to work on that. And Sayward, again, Merry Christmas. Thanks for calling.
Merry Christmas, Sayward.
I know a lot of people out there wanted to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Well, that was a strange mix of callers.
Well, it's Christmas. Yeah, that's what happens. That stuff like this happens. It was a great way to shift gears, though. So,
cool temperatures. You got your transition. There you go.
Yes.
So we want to talk about Cuba now, don't we?
And how it works into the presidential election, because you've done a column assessing the field, Democrats and Republicans. So let's start with Cuba. We have Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio responding very quickly on this, but Cuban-American voters played a big part in the last outcome of the last presidential election. So
sure. I think that, you know, look, I've always been a proponent of opening relations with Cuba. I think that it's very hypocritical that when you look at the countries that we do have open relations with, that we do have embassies at, and their domestic policies, and you do it in comparison, we have been, you know, really kowtailing to a very influential block of voters in a very small part of South Florida. This has been, you know, really more of a political fight than anything else. I think it's the right thing to do, and I agree with, I don't know who was speaking in that clip that you played.
That was Senator Rand Paul.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Interesting position to be in the upcoming presidential debate.
I think that is actually the right perspective, is that I've said for a long time, there is nothing, but as you said, clearly the idea of regime change did not work. I mean, the blowing up cigars, none of it worked. The
And yes, we literally tried an assassination.
To give him cancer, which I shamelessly self-promote here. If you go back on themorningedge.podomatic.com, you can listen to two interviews with Judith Baker, a former Manatee High School student.
Yes, yes.
Who was recruited by the CIA to help
them. Great. You look at that and you say, the best thing that could happen to end the current situation in Cuba is to expose them to a Western-style economy and that sort of trade. As Rand Paul said, show them the production of capitalism and the quality of life and all those different things. And again, take away that boogeyman of the United States is the reason we have problems. United States and the embargo is the reason why our economy isn't working. You take that away and the trade opens up, their lives get better, they're going to start liberalizing their country, I guarantee it.
What's the role of Pope Francis? Because it seems like that was one of the...
I think he was obviously a strong foundational part of that, being able to broker that, and I think that it historically that's going to be looked back on as probably maybe the most defining part in 50 years that we'll look at the Obama presidency. You know, this is like a Nixon going to China. How does it, you know, so I think, how does it play into the presidential politics? I think you're going to see, again, a split divide. You're going to see the Marco Rubio position, or you're going to see the Rand Paul position. And I think particularly, I don't think you're going to see a Democrat that says it's a bad thing. So particularly within the Republican Party, I think this is going to be a flashpoint.
Menendez from New Jersey is against it.
I don't think you're going to see an actual... Democratic presidential candidate.
And according to the exit polls from the 2012 presidential election, the number of shift of Cuban American voters in South Florida compared with John Kerry to President Obama in either election in the 2012 election was enough to make, was the equal to the
and
difference
of
victory.
That's generational, too. You know, there was a great book that Tom Wolfe wrote a couple of years ago, Back to Blood. And he sent it in Miami, and it really talked about the Haitian and Cuban cultures. It was an excellent book that really helped you understand the generational differences between Cubans who weren't born there and now are up, you know, three generations removed from people that were that came over as refugees, and those attitudes are changing tremendously.
Dennis, we only got a couple minutes here. I want to alert people, if you can go to thebradentontimes.com, and you should always sign up for the email updates if you haven't already at thebradentontimes.com. You can get Dennis's columns, and you can get in detail the assessments of the Democrat and Republican fields. So in the minute and a half, 2 minutes, can you sum that up, and then they can go to the website and look in depth?
Yeah, I think you've got a very interesting race coming up. I mean, obviously, the odds-on favorite for the campaign you're going to see is Bush versus Clinton. But, you know, one thing I'll point to is that the media and the odds-on favorites and conventional wisdom this far out has almost never been correct. So it wouldn't surprise me the least bit if that wasn't the race, but it's very hard to imagine anyone unseating either of those in their parties. And the big reason is that the Bushes and the Clintons lock up all the big money in the Republican and Democratic parties, respectively. So to go up against them, and now somebody pointed out to me yesterday, well, hey, listen, you know, everybody said Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in for 2008 and along came Barack Obama. I think that was kind of a 100-year storm. I think there were a lot of things happening that allowed something very unlikely to come into convergence, and there were a lot of people that were punished for that. I mean, if you look in the inside politics of Democrats, there were a lot of people who were punished for not only getting on board with Hillary, but even staying there after the ship was sinking. I think they're going to be reticent to do that again if they don't have a Barack Obama-like candidate to get behind who actually has a chance. People have brought up Elizabeth Warren as the obvious, you know, person in that.
We're shut down. That's a power thing.
No, we're fine.
I've got no sound.
Yeah. Oh, I've got no sound either. The obvious person in that role would be Elizabeth Warren, but as I noted to them in response, the thing about Barack Obama was he took the Wall Street money, and he has since been very, very easy on Wall Street or any kind of financial regulation. Elizabeth Warren would not be able to be Elizabeth Warren if she ran a Barack Obama-type campaign insurgency against Hillary Clinton. So the candidate that they want in Elizabeth Warren, I don't see a financial pathway, absent of if there was some sort of economic cataclysm, a bank failure or something right before the primary, and, you know, it started to become become a really bad thing to be the person with the same last name as the guy who repeals Glass-Steagall. Absent of that, I don't see Elizabeth Warren having any kind of viability.
Well, one name that wasn't in your column that I think he's actually announced or at least said the exploratory committee is former Senator Jim Webb. And I don't know that he has a serious chance in the primaries, but it sounds like he's running for vice president.
And that's a great, you know, that's a great point. I noted that it might really on both sides be a vice president sweepstakes, because if this isn't the year to oppose one of those dynasties, it certainly is the one to get in position. Everybody knows historically the best route to the presidency is through the VP.
He brings a lot of things that Hillary Clinton does, conservative Democrat,
yes.
Military background. The only thing that's a little shaky is some of those books he wrote have some interesting passages. We're at the end of the hour. I do want to give a heads up to the audience besides. I'm sure Augie has some holiday wishes for you. One story that we barely touched on and it got buried in the news, just came out results yesterday. Maybe the BradenTimes.com will feature something about this, or John Rehill, it's sort of up his alley, is the Public Service Commission has decided to allow Florida Power and Light to charge the consumers to get the capital to invest in a natural gas company. They're going to get a 10% return on their money, but they couldn't go into the private equity markets to get their money. We're going to finance it, and what it looks like is we're going to get a return on our bills. They'll get a 10% return. We'll get a one-tenth return. We'll get $1 back for every $10 we send them.
Well, peace on earth to men of goodwill who end up screwing the taxpayer. The PSC is appointed by our governor, and this is his brick of coal that he's handed the taxpayer on top of all the other costs. Fortunately, the low cost of gasoline is saving people at about $15 a fill-up from what it was about a year ago. So we've got that incentive to do spread goodwill, and I wish you a Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas. Thanks for having us.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Sullivan.
On Monday, and we'll probably have a special show, Best of the Morning Edge, on Christmas Eve Day.
There we go. Maybe we'll play. I've got